this same lady that we had been making the report on pulls up into the McDonald's parking lot. Only this time, she's hanging out the passenger window with her pistol in her hand.
Listen up, gang. If you've not heard of Big Tech's ordinance on the internet, you've got to check it out. Ike and his team are wildly popular in the shooting and self-defense community because they are committed to providing the greatest selection of top-shelf gear at a fair price, supported by knowledgeable staff and undisputedly the best customer service in the industry. Please thank them for their support of this Active Self-Protection podcast by considering them for any of your gear needs and let them prove to you why they have an almost fanatical fan base of their own. Please visit BigTexOrdinance.com, BigTexOrdinance.com, and let them know the Ass Podcast sent you. Alrighty, gang, welcome back to the Active Self-Protection Podcast. I am your host, Mike Williver, your favorite former Fed. Just got back from the ASP National Conference in Manhattan, Olsburg area of Kansas, and it was a rousing success. It was a really good time, and I encourage any of you that take your training seriously, if you can swing it, I think it's $600 is the entry fee for this thing, and the amount of training you get compressed into a three-day period is unbelievable, and it's for a good cause, the Flint Hills Foster Teen Camp, and Mike and Lisa out there really appreciate you coming out to that and helping out. And our guest today, as it turns out, was an attendee at this year's conference who I met there, and we hit it off. His name is Brent Mordecai. He lives in Kansas. He's originally from Dallas. I'm hoping he's not a Cowboys fan. We haven't gotten that far yet. He is married with two kids, and he is a mechanic at a nuclear power plant. Brent, thanks so much for coming on. I appreciate you.
It's good to be here, Mike, and it was a pleasure meeting you this last weekend.
So let's just talk conference for a moment before we get into your details. You went. Was this your first time going?
Yeah, it was my first time, and it was fantastic, I must say.
So give the listeners a couple of examples of classes that you took.
So I actually started on Friday. I had Pistol Essentials with Brian Hill. And if anybody doesn't know who Brian Hill is, you need to look him up. He is an amazing instructor.
Yeah, it can get redundant at times. Not redundant, but repetitive. Whenever you mention any of the instructors from Sing, you're like, holy crap, this guy's world class. You know, Adam Winch. I won't even name names because it'll go on, but phenomenal. Another class you took?
I also did the church safety seminar, which John did the classroom portion of that, and then Neil actually did the shooting portion.
Yeah, I was there for the shooting portion. That was a lot of fun, huh?
It was.
Anyway, here we are. So talk to us about you and your self-defense background. This incident happened when, approximately?
It's been quite a few years ago. It actually happened in about probably 1998.
Last century.
Yes. Right. It's been a long time. I had a concealed carry permit at the time, but I wasn't very diligent in carrying. And this incident actually changed some of that for me.
Interesting. So you had done some training. You had a firearms permit prior to this whole thing.
Correct.
And so how old would you say you were when you decided to start carrying a gun and exercising your constitutional rights?
So that had probably only been about a year at the time. So I was probably 24, 25 at the time.
So talk to us about the day and where you were, who you were with, and how did this whole thing get started? I know it was a road rage incident.
Yes. So it was, I'd actually just gotten out of the Navy not too many months previous to this, and I had moved back to Texas after that. I had a motorcycle at the time, and I'd met a few guys that I'd been riding with. Didn't really know them very well, just kind of acquaintances through the motorcycle. And it was a Friday night. Lived in a fairly small town, probably 25 to 30,000 people, mm-hmm. Which I still consider small, being, you know, not a metropolis.
Sure.
And it was a Friday night. And I remember that specifically because Friday night, it was in the fall, so it was Friday night football, high school football in Texas. So the town was actually very, very dead, if you will. There wasn't hardly anybody out.
Because high school football is a religion in Texas. It's not like anywhere else, right?
That is correct. So we were out. There was actually a pretty good group of us this night. There was probably 7 or 8 guys who had kind of met up, and not to stir the pot any, but we were at Whataburger. I know how we are about that sometimes.
Brent, my friend, we settled this last week with my last guest. I thought you knew that. So
I heard that. I did hear that.
So just as an aside, what do you think of my conclusion that they are both good but different and not to be compared anymore?
So I've also lived on the West Coast, and I would completely agree with you. They are completely different restaurants.
I'm glad we put this to rest once and for all. So continue. You went to Whataburger.
So we were leaving Whataburger, and I just happened to be one of the last of this group of 7 or 8 guys who was pulling out of the parking lot. And it was, if you can picture the roads, it's an in-town kind of business area. So it's 2 lanes of traffic each direction with a median, and then stoplights every few blocks with turn lanes. So I wasn't really paying any attention. I'm still kind of waiting my turn to get out onto the road. And again, I was near the last of the line. So we all make it out onto the road, and we only had gone 1 block. So we were headed north, but we actually wanted to go south. So we had to go to the next light to hang a U-turn. So we were in the left turn lane, getting ready to make this U-turn at the light. And I notice one of the guys I'm riding with in the very front is having words with the car next to him, who's also waiting at the red light. And you know, 8 or so motorcycles with the helmet on, and I think I had ear protection in. I had no idea what was actually being said back and forth, but I could just see that they're conversing.
Right.
And it didn't look very friendly.
Okay. So body language is telling you something's up and it ain't good.
Right. Most definitely. About that time, the light changed green. We made our U-turn. The car went forward, you know, down the road. No issue. Well, the guy who had been talking with the car immediately pulls into an empty parking lot. So we all pull up, you know, behind him. We're like, what's going on? You know, so none of us really had known what had happened. He says, I don't know, that lady was mad about, I don't know if she thought I pulled out in front of her or what, but she threatened to shoot me. And we're like, what?
Seems like a reasonable response to being cut off in traffic.
Right. And we're like, oh, whatever, you know, we kind of were blowing it off. And he says, no, she held up a pistol case, and she didn't necessarily show me a gun. She showed me a cased gun.
Huh. Okay, that's an interesting maneuver.
So right.
Shows him a cased gun, and he decides to pull off and catch his breath. So what happened then?
Right. So, and same thing then. We're like, well, what do you want to do? And this was kind of before everybody had a phone in their pocket, right? So he's like, well, it's a fairly small town. He's like, I think I want to report it just in case anything happens, because she seemed fairly serious, right? I mean, he didn't really want to blow it off, and I can't really blame him for that, right? So,
oh, absolutely, yeah, that absolutely should be reported to the police.
So, rather than make, you know, we didn't really want to make a 911 call. There was no real quote immediate danger, so the easiest thing was us to just drive the 2 miles down the road to the police station, where we all knew where it was at. It's a fairly small town.
And my guest from last week thanks you, by the way, for not tying up 911.
Right. So we all head back out of this parking lot, and we're continue south, same direction we were going, to head to the police station just to go in and make a report with the desk sergeant. Well, on our way down there, we happen to see a police cruiser sitting on the McDonald's parking lot. Well, that seemed easier. So he pulls in there, and we all follow him to pull into the McDonald's parking lot. Whenever we pull up, none of us really parked. We kind of just were kind of a little bit all over the place. We didn't, because 8 motorcycles, right? So we didn't really park in parking spots per se. We just kind of pulled up next to the car, and we were kind of a little all over. So get out and start telling the officer what had happened. And there were actually two officers in the car, in the cruiser that night. And being Friday night football, that was the only car on the parking lot. There was nobody else at McDonald's at the time, which was kind of a little bit odd. So one of the officers gets in his cruiser, because this literally happened less than 2 minutes ago. So he gets in the car to try and see if he can go find this lady, given the description of the car that has been given to him, while the other officer stays on the parking lot to get all of our statements.
Okay.
So now, if you can picture the situation, there's eight motorcycles parked kind of haphazardly in this parking lot, and a group of eight of us standing around, all facing in, talking. But just so happens that there is a uniformed police officer standing in the middle of us.
Okay, I can totally picture you. You described that perfectly. I get what you're talking about.
So this, we'd probably been there. It had only been not even 5 minutes, I would say, when this same lady that we had been making the report on pulls up into the McDonald's parking lot. Only this time, she's hanging out the passenger window with her pistol in her hand.
So before we continue, how long did it take you or anyone else there, for example, your friend who had had the confrontation with her, to realize this is the same person? Was it pretty obvious, instantaneous?
It was instantaneously obvious, because she literally had her hand out the passenger window with her pistol in her hand.
Oh boy. But so odds are she can't see the uniformed officers there, because you're sort of blocking her view.
That's fact.
Okay. So she pulls up, she has a gun out the window of the car. Is she saying anything?
Not that I remember. I don't remember her saying anything. It's been a number of years. And also, even if she had, I'm not so sure I would have known what she had said anyway, given what was going on.
Yeah, you're a little focused on the old gun.
A little bit, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So, natural reaction, all of us scatter, essentially. And you know, the large, like, street light poles that have the circular concrete base on them? Just so happened to be one right next to where I was. So I'm taking cover behind it.
That's quality cover, by the way.
That's kind of what I thought. And all of the guys just kind of scattered and hiding behind motorcycles and basically all just ducking for cover. And of course, the last thing that she expected to see when we scattered was a uniformed police officer standing in the middle of us. Especially since right. how there was yes. no cruiser there, right?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
So he does what you would expect and draws his own weapon and starts issuing her commands. And I couldn't see her face. She had pulled just a couple of feet past where I was standing. So I couldn't really see her face or see what was going on in her car. But she pulled back through the passenger window and is now fully back in the driver's seat from best I could tell. But again, I'm taking cover, but still trying to see if I need to, you know, try and evacuate from somewhere else, depending on what's happening here.
Right. Just a quick note. I'm going to interject here really sure. quick. You know, there's a human, it's, I don't know if it's an instinct, I would call it, but there's just this feeling, and this isn't necessarily why you were poking your head out. You wanted to make sure you were in a good spot, but there is a human, I guess, desire or instinct to try to see the thing that's happening. Like, you know, when people should be getting the heck out of Dodge, they want to sit and look at the tornado or the crazy lady with a gun or whatever it is. So just as a quick teaching point, if you find yourself in a position to flee or get behind cover and not poke your head out unnecessarily, I recommend it. I recommend that entirely. So at this point, you can't really see her, but you're trying to judge whether or not you need to move further, get out of the way, or potentially get out of a line of fire that's ever evolving. And then what happens?
So again, she had kind of gone back into the car. So at this point, the officer runs around behind the car to get behind the B pillar. Right. I mean, full normal. And I'm sure he could probably see better than I could. And from what I gathered, I think she had laid the gun in the passenger seat at that point when she realized that he was a police officer.
Good call.
Right? So he runs around behind the B-pillar, still issuing commands for her to get out of the car, which she's not moving at this point. I can see nothing happening, right? So he flings her door open, and as you would expect, full felony stop, out by the hair of her head, onto the concrete, knee on the back, cuffs her. It, just what you would picture, right? Given the given what has just transpired.
So he gets her out of the car. He proceeds to handcuff her. I assume other did he get on the radio at all? Do you probably don't remember that? But did he get on the radio and say, "Hey, there's a person here with a gun. I need help," or no?
I don't know exactly, but given the speed in which everybody else showed up, I can only think that he must have done that as he went behind her vehicle before he extricated her.
Okay. Yeah, interesting. It baffles me what people will do, especially road rage stuff. My wife and I were talking about this earlier today. We were in the car and somebody was, you know, honking and yelling at somebody else next to them for some perceived injustice they had committed. And for some reason, I think people feel invincible when they're inside their car. They will do and say things they would never ordinarily do if you were face to face with someone. It's kind of like a microcosm of the internet, you know? I feel like I'm here, you're there, I can say whatever and flip you the bird and wave a gun around, and somehow miraculously, because I'm in a motor vehicle, I'm not going to get hurt. Do you happen to know any of the follow up as far as whether she was charged or convicted of anything?
I don't actually. You know, we had all given a statement, and yeah, like you say, he had been on the radio for sure, because I didn't know that that small town had that many police officers.
Right. Okay. Yeah. They'll all come out for something like
this. And they were already out looking for this crazy woman with a gun based on the call that had already been made when the other officer had left. Right. So they were all already aware, I'm sure, of kind of something that was going on. So yeah, four or five of them pulled up in a hurry.
For all we know, somebody else at that light might have seen the same thing or heard her say something and called 911 themselves. So that's always a possibility. So do we know any of the follow up as far as her? Obviously, she was arrested. I mean, it's not like you would follow this closely, you know, or anything. But do we happen to know if she was convicted of anything or if she had any criminal history?
I do not know. We did ask after she was in custody and they were kind of finishing up. We asked her, like, you know, do you need to get another statement from us? And the officer that had been there with us on the parking lot kind of laughed. And he goes, no, I'm pretty sure that my testimony on this will be good enough.
Indeed. Almost certainly. So we talk about learning lessons on all things active self-protection related, whether it's the main channel or the podcast or the extra channel or the classes. So something I think by way of a short debrief, I think you all did well was to not overreact and not freak out and decide to go to the police station and make a report. Well done there. And I think, I don't know what everyone else did, but the fact that you, as Stephanie Wagner likes to say, radically and rapidly accepted reality. There is a person with a gun coming this way. I need to do something right now. And got behind quality cover is well done. That's exactly what I would hope that you would do. The presence of a police officer in my mind is a reason I would probably consider not, if you had been armed, not drawing my gun in that moment, because other officers showing up are not going to know what's going on or who's who. After this all went down and you get home and you're thinking about it, were you kicking yourself for not having been carrying that day?
I did a little bit, you know. Kind of the thing that was going through my mind after replaying this whole incident was, so like I had said, immediately 10 seconds after this had happened, we all stopped on a different parking lot that did not have police officers at it. Had she immediately hooked a U-turn and pulled into that parking lot, I wonder what would have happened there.
Yeah, there's no telling. I mean, who knows? I mean, I think a lot of people do either pull or brandish a gun with no intention of using it. They just figure it's a magic pill, and all the bad man who did this bad thing in traffic will now run away scared because I've brandished a gun. They don't think this stuff through, because I think road rage is just that. You're in a rage and you're not thinking clearly. And it's just one of those things, listeners, if you find yourself in the middle of something like this, where you know, where you're the not the aggressing party, do everything you can to disengage. Try to pull off the freeway, pull off the road, do what these guys did and try to disengage, because trying to fight back with a person can end in a way you cannot possibly predict, whether it's a car accident or a shooting. You could end up doing something you regret, where you violate the law in such a way that you end up in jail for God knows how much time. And if you are the person who's angry, you're the person who's mad. I think everyone has experienced legitimately someone, you know, cutting them off in a way that was so dangerous, he could have had a terrible accident. And you do, the instinct is to get angry, is to be pissed off. And I totally understand that. But if you find your blood rising in a situation like this, or you've started to wave your fist at someone or brake check him or whatever it is, I want you to hear my voice in the back of your head saying, you don't want to do this. Slow down, relax. You didn't get hurt, as it turns out. The accident didn't happen, so we don't want to escalate this any more than we have to. And if so, if you're the aggressor or the non-aggressor, disengage, get out of there, because nothing good comes from a road rage incident. I remember being, when I was LE in Southern California, on my way home in an unmarked car, and these two vehicles come up on either side of me. I'm doing 75 on the freeway. They're doing like a buck 10, and it was a Jeep and some other nondescript sedan. And out of the Jeep comes a like 64-ounce styrofoam cup of soda, which gets lobbed at the other car, hits the windshield. At which point I just pulled the vehicle that had been hit with the drink. I pulled them over because they were closer to me. The idea being, I just wanted to separate these two. There's nothing good's going to come out of this. And to get to the other car would have meant racing up behind him and endangering more people. So the Jeep slowed down. The other car got pulled over and stopped. And, you know, at the end of the day, all's well that ends well. So since this incident, I know you were at the conference. Did it inspire you to up your training at all? Did you shoot more often or seek out more training or no?
No, I really didn't seek out much training, but I did become diligent in carrying pretty much at any opportunity that I could, because I would just replay in my mind, you know, what if she had pulled up to the other parking lot? I mean, what? And I honestly believe to this day that had there not been a policeman standing there, she would have started shooting at us. I really believe that. The fact that she purposefully sought us out and then pulled up already with a gun out the window, I still think that that was her intentions. I really do. And if the police officer hadn't been there, I mean, the only thing I would have been able to do would be to run. I would have had no real way to defend myself at that point. And that kind of just made me a little bit sick to my stomach.
Absolutely. This is what this show's all about. It's what the Second Amendment's all about, honestly. The Second Amendment isn't in place necessarily for self-defense in this instance. It's in place to prevent a tyrannical government from coming in and dominating the populace. But it has the nice side effect of allowing free Americans to carry a firearm on their person pretty much anywhere they go. And fortunately for this country, a lot of states are loosening that up. We had a group text with Soleil Roche from Hawaii, and she sent us a redacted picture of a carry permit from Hawaii, which was so restrictive as to be almost a joke. One county, one gun. You can only carry the gun in the specific county, and it has to be the gun you train with. It's kind of a mess. But most places are opening that up. You see places like New York and California, post Bruin, who are doing everything they can to confound the law and to put regulations and laws in place that make it so difficult to carry anywhere that you don't bother. And I hate to see it. So thank God you lived in Texas, and from then on out, you had no problem carrying a gun for the rest of your life every day that you could. Can I ask, post this, I ask all the guests this, would you experience any kind of PTS, anything, any lost sleep or hypervigilance or anything like that? Or
no, I don't think I really did. Again, I wouldn't say that it was like an anxiety, but I was very conscious about carrying from then on. And I still am to this day. Since that, I've had a concealed carry permit in 4 different states. I'm still actively doing that. I'm actively seeking training, which is something that I haven't necessarily done as much as I should have, that I'm hopefully going to be pursuing some more of in the future.
Very good. So I met Brent here at the Active Self-Protection National Conference and a bunch of other awesome people. And I can't tell you enough what a great weekend it was. John and Steph and Neil do a lot of the heavy lifting. Steph does the vast majority of the planning and stuff, and it's just a lot of work. But every year it seems that God shows up and things come together. So if you are even remotely inclined, next September, late September of 2023, we'll be doing it again. So check it out, sign up. And Brent, was there anything you wanted to add before we part ways?
I don't think so. Thank you, Mike.
It's absolutely my pleasure. Folks, stay tuned for the Gutowski Files with Stephen Gutowski of TheReload.com, where we are discussing one of the cases that I mentioned a moment ago about California. The idea being roughly that they are trying to make it so that if you sue the state of California because one of their firearms rules or regulations or laws is screwed up, and you lose any part of that lawsuit, you get to pay the government's legal fees, which is so maddening to me. As a closet libertarian, I can't even begin to tell you. So stay tuned for that. Brent, thanks again. We'll see you soon, buddy. All right, gang. Welcome back to the Gutowski Files featuring Stephen Gutowski, our intrepid reporter. He is the host of the Weekly Reload podcast and the founder of TheReload.com, where you should go and consider getting a membership because Stephen needs to pay his bills, and he does that through his members' generous contributions through their membership. And we're always happy to have you. Good to see your face, although no one else can see it. Nice to see your face. Stephen, how are you, sir?
It's nice to see your face, too.
No, it's not. So right before we hit the record button, he and I were debating the relative merits of making this a audio and video podcast. So it's in yes. The works, potentially, folks. We're gonna see what we can do about that. I don't know why anyone would
want
to.
Put it in the comments of what you guys think, what you want to see.
Yeah, leave us a review.
I think everyone would like to see more of Mike and nope. that gorgeous beard.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I think... If you do, leave us a review. Yeah, if you want a video podcast, let us know. We want to know, want to make the people happy. So this week we are discussing an article over at The Reload, written by contributing writer. Was that what you'd call it, Jake?
Yeah.
Yeah, Jake Fogelman.
Contributing writer, Jake Fogelman. We'll have to have him on this show.
Nice.
At some point in the near future. I think that'd be great.
So go ahead. So to read you the headline, and then I'll let Stephen explain it, because I'm not even going to try to explain this. It's rather complex legal stuff, but... The headline is Gun Groups File Suit Against California Law Designed to Discourage Gun Lawsuits or Suits. And California is up to their old shenanigans again, it sounds like. Stephen, tell us what's going on out there.
Yeah, so this one's interesting because I think it's gotten very little attention for how important it is. It actually stems from the Texas abortion law that's gotten a lot of coverage, a lot of attention. But this particular section of it, hasn't gotten much attention either. And obviously California copied that Texas abortion law, but applied it to guns, right? They sort of, out of spite, they're like, if you're going to do this for abortion, we're going to do it for guns, right? That's sort of the idea here. And so that section of the Texas law got carried over into the California law. And effectively what it says is if you file suit against a California gun law, specifically the gun laws, you will have to pay the legal fees of California, even if you ultimately win and the law you're challenging is struck down. And this is for all gun laws in California. So long as you lose on any claim, you know, oftentimes when there's a gun rights challenge brought against a state, they'll have several claims, right? That they make in their lawsuit. It's not just a single claim that they're making. But they'll have multiple claims in ways that the law is unconstitutional in their view, right? And it's pretty common for a case where you read a headline that the gun rights group won, then the law got struck down and declared unconstitutional. They might not necessarily win on every single claim that they made, and sometimes they'll make claims that are in the vein of, well, okay. If you don't think it's unconstitutional for this reason, here's a more limited, argument about why this section is unconstitutional.
Kind of like a reserve on an auction item?
Sort of, right? And so that's not an uncommon thing to do in litigation. And the problem with this law is that it makes it so, one, the prevailing party can only be the government. in this case, under this law. And, you know, when it comes to legal fees in this manner. And so anytime the government wins on any claim in a lawsuit over guns, the plaintiffs, the people challenging the law, will have to pay the legal fees of the government, even if the plaintiffs ultimately won on the larger question of whether the law was unconstitutional. And so it kind of flips things on its head to how they normally work, because normally if you win your case against the government, they have to pay your legal fees. Mm-hmm. The other thing this law does is that it makes it so the lawyers themselves will also be responsible for paying these legal fees. So everyone involved in the plaintiff side, the individual claimants, the groups, you know, gun rights group that might get involved, and their lawyers will all be held responsible for paying legal fees. And it's basically just designed to try and prevent people from suing
the
state.
I could see how it would have an extremely chilling effect on people contemplating a suit against the state. That seems unbelievable to me, frankly. So what is their stated purpose for this law? What are they claiming it's for? They're not claiming it's to dissuade people from filing suit, obviously. So what's their reasoning?
Well, California adopted this law because it was in the Texas law. I mean, there isn't really like they didn't come out and give like a defense this law in California is a very cynical thing that is done as a way of saying, well, if you're going to do this for abortion in Texas, we're going to do it for guns in California. And it's sort of a tit for tat situation. Mm-hmm. One that, frankly, if a court doesn't stop this provision from being enforced, now this law hasn't gone into effect yet. That's a key thing to remember here. It doesn't go into effect until the beginning of next year. And so the gun rights groups that are suing over this are trying to block that law from going into effect. And if the Texas version of this law or the California version doesn't get blocked eventually, you can expect to start to see this everywhere else in the country, I would think, for all kinds of different issues. You know, there's no particular reason why it would have to be limited to just gun laws or mm-hmm. just abortion laws if the courts don't do something about this. And look, a lot of people think this is sort of obviously unconstitutional. There was a previous attempt to block this law as part of another lawsuit in California over their magazine limits, if I'm remembering correctly. And that was dismissed by the Ninth Circuit without prejudice, meaning that they could refile it again because the larger issue, the case over the magazine limitations in California was remanded down to the lower court for reconsideration. And so as part of that, the higher court just didn't take up this issue essentially, but says, you know, you can take it up when you relitigate this case again at the lower court. So this is the second attempt. I believe there's also, this one is the Second Amendment Foundation and Firearms Policy Coalition, who are bringing this case alongside Cal Guns Foundation. There's also going to be another suit that's in the works for being filed over this exact issue from the California State Rifle and Pistol Association, the NRA affiliate in the state. So you're going to have several challenges to this law making their way through court soon. There haven't been any progress on the Texas version that I'm aware of as far as, you know, challenges or rulings. So right now it's an open question as to whether or not this is going to stand. And if it does, I like the effect, I think, is going to be very chilling, you know, basically making it a lot harder to sue the state over their various laws.
Yeah, I'm not a fan. You know, I know you always keep up with this stuff, so we will, I'm sure, hear more about this in the future. So folks, do us a favor. Listen to this Gutowski Files episode every week. But also, go over to thereload.com where there is a lot more information. You get a lot more in-depth information if you read Jake's article, and get a feel for what's going on with this. And Stephen relies on your membership to continue his important work over there. So if you are lamenting the lack of down the middle, sane, sober reporting on the Second Amendment and all things gun related, go give him a look. TheReload.com and consider getting a membership. Stephen, I thank you so much for being on, and we'll see you next week.
Absolutely.
Hey, friends, this is John Correa. If you like the podcast, if it is bringing you value, do me a favor and leave us a rating and a review. It really helps us out.